Welcome to a Listen to Older Voices Golden Moments program. I'm brought to you through the Toorak Times. This is a repeat program from our archives that we believe has merit enough to rebroadcast so that the story and the person's life can be shared with those who may have missed it the first time. Hello. Rob Greaves here, and it's a pleasure to bring you another program in the continuing series of Listen to Older Voices. This is part one of a three-part program on the life and times of 74-year-old Pasquale Collodonato. Pasquale provides us with an insight into a lifestyle that is rapidly passing, an insight into the life of a rural Italian family in a rural Italian village, both prior and during the Second World War. His story includes tales of him being a shepherd from the age of six, often sleeping in huts on the hills, looking after the sheep with his Marama dogs, protecting them from the wolves. Great days, interrupted by the war. He lost his father. He lost his home. He lost his way of life. But at war's end, something remarkable happens that brings pride to his mother and an amazing future for Pasquale. So settle back, listen, learn, and share the life and times of Pasquale Collodonato. Pasquale, first of all, thank you very much for inviting me into your home and appearing on our program. Can I start by asking you when you were born and where you were born?
Well, I was born in Italy, a place called Abruzzi, in central Italy. And that was in 1935.
So you were born about the same time as trouble was stirring in Europe.
Exactly. Yes. Precisely.
Yes. What are your earliest memories?
Earliest memories? As a child, you mean? Yes.
Yes.
The games I used to play with my mates. Many, many times I used to go and be a shepherd, look after sheep on the hills, and do whittling with knife and sticks and make walking sticks and all that sort of stuff. And also the good times I used to have with my father. My father used to teach me things, building huts, mud huts, and with wood from the bushes and all that sort of thing, you know, and how to milk sheep and goats, and make cheese, pecorino cheese it used to be called, and look after myself, and plus look after the sheep, you know. That was the job that I used to do many a times. When my father used to be a lumberjack, he used to go chop wood through contractors in order to get a few dollars, you know, for the family.
Right. Your father obviously was a very important person in your life.
He was.
What do you remember about him as a person?
I remember about him that he was a very big, very strong man. He was a man, well, his own sort of person and integrity that he had, and he believed in what he did and did what he believed, regardless of what the consequences might be. So he would do things and worry about the results after, whether were good or bad or otherwise. That didn't worry him. He did what he thought was best to do, and he went on with it.
What about your mother? What do you remember about Mum?
And my mother, she was a wonderful woman. She was plain, average, ordinary woman, came from a farming family, and they lived in the old-fashioned type of ways, but she had a very good heart. She was very kind, very very good to us children, very good to my father, and she was an extremely hard worker.
How many brothers and sisters did you have?
I had four sisters and four brothers.
That's a big family,
yes,
by today's standards.
Yes, yes.
Was there many years between you, or were you all around about the same?
Oh, no. There was 3-4 years in difference between us all. Sometimes there was 5 years in between.
Right.
And so, yeah.
So you were never short of people to play with then?
No. There was people always around. That as a child.
Yes. As a child, I assume you went to school?
Yes.
Did you enjoy it?
Yeah, I enjoyed it very much. That's one thing I always enjoyed, school. And for some reason or other, I recall that they were the best days of my life. At school, with my friends, my mates, school friends, you know. and the things we used to learn, the things we used to do, and then later on we used to talk about it.
Yes.
And work out which one was the best, you know, and what, if it was wrong or right, or what we liked better, and what we didn't, you know, sort of thing. Yeah.
But what do you recall that you really liked? Was there a subject or something like that you really enjoyed at school?
Yeah, poetries.
Poetry.
I used to like a lot. In fact, I still write poetry today. History, dictation, we used to do all that. And the learning of poetries overnight.
Right.
To repeat it the next morning.
Yes.
In my memory, mind you.
Yes.
That was good because it kept you so busy and alert and remember what you were reading about it. And all, yeah, and the calligraphy.
Ah, scripting.
Scripting, yeah.
Yes.
I used to love calligraphy. We used to have those fountain pens in those days. And that you put ink in it, you know.
That's right, yes.
Yeah. And I used to like to write that calligraphy, make all those fancy letters and writings, you know. And that was very, very good.
Which is something today seems to be lost in schools now with computers and everything.
Yes.
You got not only an enjoyment out of it, it was almost like an art form, wasn't it?
It was. It was, absolutely. Even painting, like landscapes and that. I'm not very good on facial paintings, but I do paint. I used to do before, just sketchings, you know.
Mm.
But that didn't appeal me too much. I want to do something with paint at last. And I started to learn to paint the landscapes. These are some of my paintings.
They're yours.
But yeah.
Pasquale is just pointing out some pictures on the wall.
Yeah.
And I have to say to people listening, they are seriously good.
That's an original scene up there, that one.
You really have an eye.
It's
a
sunset, yes. Yeah.
Back to you as a schoolboy. What did you do for fun? What did you and your mates get up to?
We used to run through the farms, and days like when the fruits used to begin to ripen, we used to go and pinch apples and cherries and things off the farmers, and that we used to call that fun. We used to have a war among each other. There used to be a river called Aventino River down the middle of the town where I used to live, and there used to be kids on that side of the river, kids on this side. So we used to have those shangalais.
Yes.
We used to make and collect all these stones. And we throw these stones at each other until someone would call the police. And then we'll take off.
Kids almost seem to be the same no matter what country you're in. Yeah, they all have their slingshots. Yeah. And if it's not a river, it's a railway track or a road. There's always a gang one side or the other. Yeah.
From one side of the border to the other. No, come on this side. You stay on your side. And so that used to be pretty good. Yeah, we used to do lots of things. And we used to go walking a lot, hiking up on the hills, looking for small pears.
Oh, okay.
Crab pears, they call it here. And we used to pick them and put them in sacks. And then we used to bury them in the straw. And then they would ripen. And every so often we used to go and dig them up. A little bit. We pull the straw aside, and the ripened ones we'd eat them. Then they would cover it up again. We made a deal. They came ripened again.
So as a gang of kids, you never went hungry.
No. And we used to also get. There used to be lots of bushes of hazelnuts.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, we used to have lots of fun picking the hazelnuts, and then we'd get somewhere, sit down, and have two stones. One as a whole, the other to bang on and split them up, and we'll be eating these nuts, you know. To us then, compared to the people of the kids of today, the kids of them said, what the devil are you doing? That's stupid. To us was fun.
It was fun and it was healthy.
Yes, because you were outside,
yes.
You were among friends, you did what you liked best among yourselves, and we just loved it. We just loved it.
I can see that on your face now, even as you're recollecting it. It's still as if it was almost yesterday.
Yes. I often think about that.
Yes.
Yeah, it was very, very good.
Listen to Older Voices, where stories from the past find a home in the present. I'm Rob Greaves, and I'm talking with Pasquale, who's recalling his life as a young boy in an Italian rural village.
With all the fun you had, you did mention that you also looked after the sheep. Now, how old were you roughly when you started looking after sheep?
The first time my dad took me on the hills was, I was then just about 6 years old.
Oh, so you were quite young.
Yeah, yeah. And he taught me, because I used to be very keen watching, I always been the same, always watch what other people do. And if they were good and appealed to me, I would try my best to redo it again, you know, do it myself. To not only look after the sheep, but to make sure that he didn't go astray and go eat somebody's wheat or beans or vegetable gardens and all that. So you have to keep them in line, you see?
Yes.
So you have to be, you learn to be boss for those sheep to make sure they didn't do the wrong thing. And also, apart from that, we used to do also the milking of the sheep. Every morning they had to be milked and every night.
Sheep. Okay, that's not something I'm familiar with.
Well, in Australia today, they have dairy farms.
Yes.
Just for sheep and goats.
Right.
They milk them and they make what they call the pecorino cheese. Have you ever seen it?
No, I haven't.
Oh, that's strange.
No, I'll have to chess that up. And for people listening, thing.
Well,
what's nice about it for people listening?
The pecorino cheese, it's one of those cheeses that's very, very rich.
Right.
In itself, and it's what they call the Parmesan.
Parmesan.
The great Parmesan for to put on pasta, spaghetti, and soups.
And that's anything. Made out of goat's and milk's cheese, is it?
And sheep.
And sheep cheese, I mean. Sheep.
Yeah, yeah.
No,
yeah.
I didn't know that. Yeah.
That's why it's called pecorino, because pecore derived from the Latin word sheep.
Well, there you go. Well, you learn something all the time.
Yeah, yeah. And we used to make this cheese and then put them in small baskets, put salt on it and hang them up in the sheds that we used to have up on the hills to dry up. And you can eat them fresh or let it dry and use them as Parmesan, whatever. And also, out of that, we used to make also the first salotto, and that was cheese. And then reboiled that again. And we used to make ricotta.
Ricotta?
You've heard of
ricotta? Oh, yes, ricotta. I like ricotta.
Especially from goat's milk. The ricotta used to be beautiful. And we used to use that to put some bread, you know, and eat it away. It was terrific.
Looking after the sheep, were the sheep ever in any sort of dangerous situations, or was it just safe and was a matter of keeping them off other people's farms, or were there natural predators?
The natural predators, there were quite a few. Wolves, mainly.
Wolves?
Wolves used to linger about on the hills. And that's why we used to have those big white dogs. Rama dogs.
Marama?
Yeah.
Right.
I think that.
So you obviously had one or more?
We had four of them.
Four of them?
Four big dogs. They were all really big. And I remember particularly one day, two wolves did come to the mob of sheep.
Right.
And the dogs went to attack them, because the wolves were much stronger, and killed one of the dogs.
Oh.
Ever since, my father, to the other three that we had left, he put this steel collar on the neck, because that's what the wolves goes for,
the neck.
Yeah.
Yes, of course, the throat.
And it had spikes on, so the wolves couldn't grab them on the neck and gave the dogs a chance to
get back at them,
yes. You see? Yeah, and guard the sheep well, so there you have.
Were you ever in a situation looking after the sheep where you felt afraid?
Not really, because that's one thing my father used to always say to me, don't ever be afraid of anything, because there's always a solution to any problem. He used to say, don't worry, even if the wolves come about, the dogs will let you know, and then you can do something about it. But don't try to guard the sheep against your own life.
Right.
Lock yourself in the shed.
Right.
And then you'd be safe. The dogs will do the rest. And they were very, very good. So the danger was not that great.
Right.
Even at the night time, many times, I slept in the shed up on the hills, guarding the sheep. But they used to have a roundabout sort of fencing.
Yes.
The sheep used to be all together. And they wouldn't stray away too far.
Yes.
For the wolves to have access to them, you know.
Yes, because they like to pick them off that way,
don't
they?
Oh, yes.
So it meant you actually slept out many nights?
Yes, because my father couldn't come back from where he was working.
Right.
And I would stay there, and it didn't worry me much at all whatsoever. I used to light a fire, I used to milk the sheep, and then I used to make the cheese the next morning, after the second milk, you know, and take the sheep out to the pastures again.
So it's a lot of responsibility for a young boy.
It was, but it wasn't a great deal. I used to enjoy it. I had another four brothers bigger than me, but they didn't like doing it.
They didn't like doing it.
No. Whereas I didn't mind it at all.
All right, so the years go on a little bit. Now, in Australia, when you've done 6 years in primary school, you move on to secondary school.
Yes.
Was there a similar system in Italy, and did you go to secondary?
No, exactly the same. We started from, I went for a little bit to kindergarten. That wasn't very good. So then I passed straight away to primary school.
Yes.
And through that, then I went to secondary school. Second grade, third grade, up till the fifth grade,
mm-hmm.
and then sixth grade. So I did all that. But that's when the life really begins. Because this was after the war, mainly, and there was a connection between the Americans and the Italian government. Can I go backwards?
Mm.
Because my father was killed at the beginning of the war.
Well, maybe this is a good place for us to go to and work our way up to the story.
Yeah.
Listen to Older Voices, Ageless Radio.
Putting aside the political implications of the war, who was right and who was wrong, at the end of the day, the everyday person is the one that suffers the most.
Yeah. Yes.
Did the war come to your area, into your village, and were you subjected to it?
Yes, the war came right to where I was. And we had the bombardments from the Americans that used to bombard the Germans, and the Germans, the Americans. And at the night time, you could look outside and you could see the bullets going from place to place, up in the air, back and forth. Then every morning, 9 o'clock, these aeroplanes, the sky used to be covered by them. And I used to come over and bombard the whole countryside, mountains and all. And then they would go away. And 9 days they did that, every morning.
Hard for us to imagine.
It was very, very hard. And I was about turning seven or so. And my father was killed. And the winter was winter time. The snow started coming. And there was 3 meters of snow everywhere. Just prior to that, the Germans had blown all the houses up with mines. They put mines throughout the house in the town, and there wasn't a house to go back to.
And including your house?
Yes. So my mother and I and my brothers and sisters had to run out, and they said everybody that comes around will shoot them. So we had to get out and go up on the hills. And under this bombardment, I tell you, was something chronic. We had no shoes to put on in the snow, bare feet, running up on these hills. And we went to one of the huts that my father had built prior. And we spent 9 months of the winter, blizzards and all, in this hut.
How did you survive?
All 8 of us. And we survived we used to eat frogs and snails and insects and whatever we came across to, roots from trees that my father used to teach us prior to this what to look for to eat, you know, to survive. Berries, whatever we came across. But when there was the snow, you couldn't reach those things.
Buried, that's right.
No. So we used to go and dig up the snow away and dig under the ground to find these roots. And it was very, very sad. We had no flour to make bread with. We had hardly, but we survived.
Your poor mother, I mean, she's dealing with the loss of her husband, the loss of her home. She's got 8 children with her that she's responsible for.
Yes.
And she's in a hut on a mountain and really no way of looking. She must have been under incredible stress.
Yes, she was.
Must have been a strong woman.
She was, and yet, that's why I said earlier on, she was a very strong-minded and body-wise person. And she was kind. She knew what to have to do as her mother's parent, and she was, you know, look, incredible. She was a really very nice mother.
Had to.
She never remarried after my father died. She never remarried. She stayed true to my father. That was her idea, never to remarry any other man.
Well, I actually think I can understand that. Yes. So it took roughly 9 months you lived on that mountain in that hut.
Yes.
What changed that you were able to leave and come back down to the village?
Then the Americans had the upper hand on the Germans.
Okay.
And they had to back off. So when the American force started to come in, we were allowed to go back to town. But the house was still in rubble.
Oh, yes.
So we had to occupy whatever building there was they available, and a room here and there, and because everybody was in the same predicament, more or less.
That's right.
And we lived in these places until, many, many years later on, Americans start to build these huts, like these ones here.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. For people that had lost their homes and they were orphans of war, one thing and another. And my mother was very lucky, she got given one. And that's where we lived. So by this time, I was about 11 years old. And between the American government and the Italian government, they came to an arrangement. Those boys, orphan of war, if they were intelligent enough, if they won a scholarship for which he had to pass 100%.
100%?
Yeah, 100%, good. They would give you a free college to study academic.
So the Americans were offering scholarships for young Italian boys to academic colleges?
Yes, up in northern Italy.
Right.
So I said to my mother, I think I'll try this. And my mother says, oh, you know, Meg, there's so many boys, teachers, sons and all that.
Yes.
You have not much of a hope. I said, well, I'll try anyway.
Yeah.
So I went and tried. And I forgot about it. I didn't think about it now because I knew I wouldn't get it.
Yes.
And I was 99%.
99%.
But they allowed it. They were kind enough to allow it and said, well, you can't be any better than that. For 1 point, it doesn't really matter. You can move, we'll pick you up from home and take you to the college where you got to live in.
How did you find out about it? Was it a letter or somebody come around?
No, they came around, they sent a letter.
They sent a letter?
Sent a letter.
Do you remember that letter arriving?
Yes. It took about 3 months for the letter to come. And they said, you have been lucky enough to have given off the whole town the gift of being able to go to college and study.
What was your reaction?
Jeez, I was jumping all over the countryside.
But you were.
I went to telling me mates all about it, you know. Really? Are you going to college? Yeah. I said, where? I said, in North Riddle. Don't ask me where, because I haven't been there yet.
Your mother must have been so proud.
And she was proud, and she was upset too, because she knew I would be away for a long, long time. A
bittersweet situation. Yes.
So when they finally sent a note to say that I would be picked up that evening of the day, I was prepared and I had nothing really to take anyway.
No.
So they brought an American Jeep to pick me up. And winter time started again.
Ah.
And I was praying God that the snow would stop at once. You could block it up.
Yes.
You couldn't up. Anyway, we made past that particular area where the snow really comes very hard from on the mountains. And we got further back. And that was good. We stayed there the night, and then we kept going the next day. It took two days, to go up, very up north in Italy, where the college was.
And where was that? What town was it?
And that was in a town called Belluno.
All right.
Way up north, where you see the glaciers up the top, the Monte Bianco.
Oh, right. That is right at the top.
Way at the top. Yeah.
Yes.
And in that college, there was about 400 boys living in college, it was, where we used to study. And then later on in the time, a couple of years afterwards, they had to make a selection for those that weren't going for academics. All they wanted to do is get a job and to learn a trade, and those others that went for academics. So the ones that went for academics were on one side. Not separate.
No,
but on one side, yeah.
Yes.
And the ones that went for trades were separate again.
Yes.
And there's about 40 odd of them. And they used to go to do their jobs, learn to do their trade, I wish to go to school.
So you kept with the academic group,
yes,
did you?
And I kept with the academic group. 2 or 3 years afterwards, I realized that things were going to take a long time for me. I wanted to become a school teacher. I had always that intention to become a school teacher because I used to think, when you're a teacher, nobody can teach you anything, but you teach others instead, you know? So I was going to be a school teacher. And things were going very, very slowly, 1 year at a time, 1 year at a time. God bless me, I said, I'll never finish this. And, you know, so the directors of the college made a rule. Every time came summertime, and that's when we used to do the exams, right, for the year. And then the whole, all of those kids in the college that stayed behind for the holiday, we used to be taken to the beach and have summertime.
Yes.
And there's fantasy and all the rest of it, yeah, swimming and all this sort of thing. But then they said, those of you that wanted to study during the summer holiday, they can do that. But mind you, it's going to be hard because when you watch all the other kids playing and you've got to be there studying and you had to stay because you had people there looking after you, you know, to,
yes,
make sure you did,
yes,
study. And they used to provide books and all the rest of it for the following year.
Join Pasquale and myself next week and find out how he coped with the pressure of constant study. Then, because of circumstances, he returns home to his village and his mother. What's her reaction? Is there a future for Pasquale in the village? How and why did he come to Australia? Tune in next week and find out in part 2 of The Life and Times of Pasquale Collodinato. Listen to Older Voices is produced by Rob Greaves at the Melbourne Community Support Program on behalf of Uniting Victoria Tasmania. The program is funded from the Commonwealth and State Government's Home and Community Care Program and is brought to you through the Toorak Times.